I'm an addict named Earl. I know we've already had a moment of silence and serenity prayer, but could we have one more moment of silence for the addicts that have passed on from us, either loaded or unloaded? Could we have one more moment, please? Thank you very much. That's one thing I do everywhere I've ever been asked to speak, no matter where it is, because I believe the many of the addicts that are not here today are the reason that I'm here today. And I believe we should never turn our backs on our wounded. I'm going to do one more thing that I asked the committee if I could do, and I do some weird stuff sometimes in the eyes of some people. And it's probably going to embarrass the lady that I'm going to do it to, but c'est la vie. There's a lady in this room that is a real special, beautiful young lady that's going to celebrate a 2-year birthday in a couple of days, and I'm going to ask her if she will come up and let me present her with a 2-year medallion. Neil. What you just saw is a miracle in recovery, you know, and this should be an example for a lot of young people in this room that think they're too young to get clean. Here's a lady that cleaned up almost the age that I started using, and she has a 2-year birthday, and I think that says a whole lot for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I'll get 2 or 3 things out of the way before I start. You know, one of them is I want to thank Betty and a lot of the other people, and especially her, for starting the kickoff meeting with some humor. We need that in Narcotics Anonymous. You know. And I've been pretty sick, and I, you know, it was questionable whether I was even going to get to come or not, and, you know, that meeting made my day. You know, I just want you to know that, and I really love you for that, and it made me, it kind of got me out of myself, you know. See, addicts, they need to replace some of the things after we quit using, you know, that, you know, like a little laughter, you know, and there's many people in this room from where we were at before we got here, it wasn't too much funny. And, you know, what I intend to do up here is I'm going to make sure that I stop on time and 9 o'clock in the first place. You know, I got there's a lady in Seattle that I lived with my first 8 and a half years clean that, you know, I spoke in a regional convention in Florida one time, and she told me, you know, I said, well, what is a good speaker? She said, a good speaker is somebody that has a time to start and has a time to stop and keeps them as close together as they can. And also, that same time that I was asked to speak, I was asked to be a Sunday spiritual speaker. And you ought to heard her laugh when she found that out. If anybody knows how unspiritual I am, it would be her. I want to spend most of the time that I have up here talking about what got me into Narcotics Anonymous and not so much about what I use, because I'm going to assume that everybody here already knows how to use. If you don't, and you're in here listening to me, you got a real problem. So, you know, I believe I don't want to be a guy that gets clean 5 minutes before the meeting's over. You know, like a lot of people in the room here, you know, I hear a lot everywhere I go about people that, you know, the lifestyle that they led and the families they were raised in all had a big part in their using to begin with, and I'm not going to really comment on that either way. I'm going to respect whatever you believe about that. Exactly what I'm going to do. I'm an addict because I use. That's why I'm an addict. And I wasn't an addict because I thought about using. So, you know, I started off, you know, in an orphan's home as a real young guy, you know, at 3 years old. So, it's kind of like, it seems like I started off on the wrong side of the tracks in the first place, and I don't know whether I did or not. I don't know if I would have been raised in a wealthy family, if I'd have wound up where I did. I don't really know about that. I know I started using when I was 13 years old, to the best of my memory. And, you know, my drug log is real short, really, when you get right down to it. You know, I don't have one of them real lengthy deals, you know. I started using when I was 13, and I got so good 31 years later I had to quit. And that's just the way it was, man. And there's some things happened along that made quitting get a little closer. a lot of problems happened in my life because of using. And you know, I've got a lot of medical problems today, you know, and I'm not going to say a whole lot about that because a lot of us have got those, you know. What we got to understand is that when addicts get clean, our problems are not over. A lot of them are just beginning, you know, and I got some big time problems going on that, and sometimes I downplay them and sometimes I don't. You know, I just went through a real, real serious bout with Hep C, and you know, there's a handful of people in this room from my area that saw me 3 months ago, as gray as the asphalt on the front of this building. And you know, that coupled with a quadruple bypass and a bullet in my spine that I got because, I was messing with somebody's money, coupled with a lot of problems that I put together, you know, I got, turned down for a liver transplant because of my high risk, and what I had to do is get into a bunch of acceptance with a lot of things, you know, and get at peace with the fact that that's not going to happen, you know, instead of being selfish and self-centered about it. You know, at first I, you know, my head was going like, well, why can't I get a liver? I've been clean a little while and tried to do right, and you know, when I found out I really wasn't going to get one, I finally came to grips with that, and I decided that instead of getting into the why me of it, why shouldn't I hope an addict gets this liver and gets in this program and gets a little time like I did, and that made it to where I can live with it and I can accept that, and I hope that happens. So you know, that's enough of the medical stuff. You know, I do the, it looks like I'm doing the, whatever the hell that rap stuff is, but, that's not really what's happening, you know. When I got that bullet in the neck, it wound up in my spine, and it's been there for a long time now, and it gives me a serious problem, and I get to doing the old twitch, you know, and it looks like I'm trying to dance or something. But, that's not really what I'm trying to do, and I'm not trying to, be distracted in anything. It's just that's part of my story, you know, and everybody in here has got their own story, you know, and I don't want anybody's story but mine, you know. The only reason my story would change from what it is would be if I use again, and I want to make sure that don't happen, see, because I believe in Narcotics Anonymous, the way you get a birthday like Bill back here is getting one. The way I believe you get a birthday in this program is I believe you pick one and you keep it. And I like mine so good, I don't want to clean up no more in the wintertime. got real cold when I started cleaning up this time, you know. And you know, just a few of the things that happened that it got me in the situation that I got in the first place is that you know, I went to prison the first time pretty young, you know, and I want to make sure that everybody in this room understands that that ain't where you have to have went to be in this program. Okay, I want you to understand that, because, you know, you're going to hear all the different speakers from all over the world telling their different stories, and everybody's got their own, and some people never even got to the city jail. It's got the same right to be in this program as anybody else. And in my case, that was just a stepping stone to somewhere else. You know? And the only reason that I got the problems that I got in my life today is not because I quit using, it's because I didn't quit quick enough. So, you know, from that, starting at 13 years old, I started getting in trouble right away, you know, and you know, I went to prison the first time in my home state. Some people in this room's already heard this story, so if I hear snoring, it's okay. It's okay. I went to prison the first time in my home state of Alabama, and I don't live there no more. You can bet on that. You know. And the second time I went to prison, is the disease that we have progresses, so does what we do to support it. So the time gets longer that we have to pull, because the crimes that we get into get worse. Okay? So the second time that I went down was at Tucker Farm in Arkansas. I don't live there anymore either. And, you know, I went in the service a couple of times between all of that, you know, and boy, I had a lot of big plans in my head, you know. I mean, how many of us had all these big plans and ideals? And, man, I was like a young kid when I went in, you know. I turned 16 years old in Korea, in Busan, Korea, making my first combat jump. And I came back from there with a Purple Heart and several decorations, and like I was the youngest decorated guy in my outfit, and you know, I was in the 101st Airborne Division. And then I thought, man, I'm really going someplace, you know. And I came back and had a break in service, and that's when I went to prison. You know, I got out and then I went back in. Went to Vietnam with the 3rd Marine Division, you know, and I went in with the Special Forces, which is my original tattoo I have, you know, and I came back there a little bit different than I went over there, you know. I had several decorations from there, and I also had an undesirable discharge because I got kicked out because I was a drug addict. And, you know, all of that stuff floored me. You know, all of that stuff floored me. You know, I was in the heavy using by that time, and, you know, I couldn't understand why I couldn't get anything together. You know, I wanted to have an army career. And, you know, in between that, I had got married in France. You know, I had went over to France and got married, man. And you know, I couldn't understand why I couldn't even be a husband. You know, it was kind of getting to where I couldn't be nothing. You know, and, you know, I used to, and I got real sad about all that. You know, every once in a while now, I get my decorations out and look at them. I still got that sentimental thing that I think that I was accomplishing something. You know, I wanted to be a guy that was volunteering to go in to fight for my country. You know, I was proud of my country that I was living in, and I wanted to be, you know, contribute to that. And it was my whole reason for doing all of that. And, you know, and then when I came back, when I got kicked out, you know, I lost all rights to vote, you know, and I was really sad about all of that, you know, and couldn't get VA benefits, and I couldn't get a lot of, you know, help that I didn't need now from that, you know, and I finally had to quit holding that against them, you know. I'm the one that used, not them. So I finally had to take and accept full responsibility for the actions that I did, you know, because what I've got is a self-inflicted disease. I don't know about anybody else. You know, nobody's ever got me loaded but me. See, so I can't come in here in front of you and blame being in the orphan's home or any of them other places because I used. You know, I used because I used. That's deep, man. And that's just the way it was, you know. So, you know, when I came back from Vietnam, you know, at ground zero, you know, I started the same pattern that I had before then. I started getting in trouble again. And you know, I'm coming to the hardest part, I guess, of this deal right now. And you know, it looks like it would get easier as time goes on for me to say certain things, but I don't know why. It seems like it gets a little harder sometimes for us to level with people, you know, because the last incident that I got in, I got in a robbery that and you know, I got to let you know that I'm a penny ante robber too, man. I mean, I didn't have the guts to even go in and try to steal anything unless I was loaded. That's why half the time I didn't get to steal nothing. But this particular time, I was loaded enough and I had a gun and I was desperate. I was really, really desperate for money, man, because I had run out of money and drugs at the same time. And I was really, really desperate, and you know, and me and two guys got a situation going, you know, and scoped the place out for a week down in Texas. Where I had wound up for some reason or another at that time, you know, and we went in to rob this place, and then I'm going to tell you something. It sounded like Vietnam all over again to me. You know, I mean, everybody had a gun. And, you know, that was, I was scared, man. I'm gonna let you know right up front that I never was one of these guys that was, throw your money on the counter and get your hands up and all that, man. I'd go in and damn near beg you for the money. You know? Yeah. I mean, I could have done better panhandling than I could at robbery. You know? But this particular time came out really, really sad. Really, really sad because I wound up being responsible for a couple of people that died in that robbery. And that's the time I got shot in the neck and got a piece of that bullet out later on and the rest of it was left in. And you know, when I finally got extradited from Holland, Maine, it wasn't too long after that that I wound up getting extradited back to Texas. And in 1964, I got the death penalty in Texas. And some of you have heard this story, so I'll understand. You're not even wanting to hear it again. But you know, the thing of it is, the only way I was ever be able, that I ever learned to be able to stand up here and be honest with you was hear you stand up here and be honest with me. So this is what I have to do. I have to get this out of the way before I can get into the recovery part. So I got the death penalty and I stayed on death row for 2.5 years. And I'm going to tell you something. I did some clawing at the gut that 2.5 years, you know. Many, many, many sleepless nights that I used to lay in there and cry like a baby by myself and wonder what was the matter with me that made me do this kind of stuff and be willing to take a human life for money, you know. And I never could understand what even made me do that in the first place, see. And then in 67, I got my one appeal that the state of Texas gave you at that time, and this is a hard one, man. 11 days short of execution, I overturned the death penalty. And that was a tough one. That was a tough one, you know. And I did this without you know, already talked about not having a lawyer. Man, I never had any lawyers either. You know, I represented myself and I couldn't read or write. And I convinced the state of Texas that I didn't pull an armed robbery with melons, and they saw fit to overturn the death penalty, and I had number 11 on my door. You know, and I had already got a sentencing date, and I was on the 30-day countdown. And so, you know, when I finally did come to N.A., I'm going to get a little bit ahead on this one. I finally did come into N.A., I didn't have a whole lot of trouble with this higher greater than myself deal. You know, a lot of people have trouble with that. You know, I hear it at meetings after meetings, you know, that I ain't into this God stuff. You know, I don't know about any God stuff. You know, what I decided that I'd rather believe in God and find out there's not one than not believe in him and find out there is one. See, I'm going to cover all the bases, man. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I pulled my life sentence after that, you know, and I got out in 76. And I've been in there a long time, man. You know, I've been in there a long time. You know, I think it was 2 weeks ago I celebrated. It wasn't like a celebration to most people, but for me it was a celebration. I wound up celebrating being clean as long as I was in prison. You know, that was a big deal for me. You know. And you know how that 17 years locked up, a lot of it was locked up by myself, man, because, you know, I was kind of like that bird man in Alcatraz, you know. I couldn't get along with nobody even in there. You know, I couldn't get along with nobody nowhere. And, I spent a lot of time in the hole, man. I got involved in 3 violent crimes in prison, and I just couldn't get along anywhere, it didn't seem like. You know, and I remember Warden Parks down in Huntsville calling me in one time and telling me, he said, man, you're the misfit of misfits. You know, he said, you don't fit anywhere. And he was right. You know, but in 76, I got my gate money, man. You know, I got my 50 cents a day that I had saved up. I hit that gate, that Al Capone looking green suit that they give everybody when they get out. Hat cocked over to one side, man, you know. Shoes must have been that long. Man, I ain't never seen a pair of shoes in Alabama that long. And didn't matter how big your feet was either. When you got out, you got the same size shoes as everybody else. You know? And you ought to have seen some of them guys littler than I was. You know? Man, they had feet like yardsticks. You know what I mean? So, you know, here we go out of there, you know, and they give everybody a ticket out of Texas, no matter where you go. Make any difference to them. You could go to New Orleans, you could go to wherever the hell you wanted to go, as long as it wasn't Texas. So I went to Denver, you know. And, man, did I... And you know, started in the same stuff up there, you know. But I've been locked up so long, man, I couldn't even steal no more hardly. You know? I couldn't even get a car running. You know? They're gonna come out with all this electronic stuff, man, and you couldn't take a paper clip and jump it in the distributor and start them no more, man. You know? I had a hell of a time trying to hotwire that damn Volkswagen, man. But I never did get it running. I just left it standing over the window busted out, you know. So, you know, and I made 2 or 3 other feeble attempts at trying to steal stuff, you know. I got hooked up with a guy in Denver, man, and we were going to go into J.C. Penney's, and get us one of them brand new USDA color televisions. And we already had it made up, man. I'm going to go in and get it. I said, I'll walk out in this store and just look around like I'm going to buy something, pick that TV up, you be on the steps, I'll hand it to you, and we're out of here. You know, so I walk in J.C. Penney's, you know. I'd got rid of my Al Capone suit, but I still had that hat cocked over to one side and some different clothes, you know, and I go in and I looked around for a little bit. And then I got all these TVs laid out, all of them playing, there were games and stuff on and stuff like that, man. I headed over towards one, man, and here comes this big black security guard. Man, it must have been, 7 feet tall, it's a new light. Man, I ain't never seen a guy that big in my life. He walked over and said, don't you touch a goddamn thing in this store. Man. It don't even look like you want to buy nothing. You know, and I thought, man, what a cold shot, you know. So, you know, I was getting to where, man, it's like I wasn't no kind of crook, you know. And you know, I wasn't much better one when I was in prison either, you know, because I was in there with guys, man, that used to talk about how good they was at stealing. And I used to wonder, what the hell are you doing in here with me? you know, and the only other story I'm even going to tell about that, man, now I'm going to tell you how good I was. You know, I hear all this stuff, man, at meetings about guys like, shit, they rode with Al Capone and all them guys, man, and I rode with jerks like me. and you know, the last, you know, deal that I was going to really pull was in Oregon, you know, and I'm not even going to say where it was at, and I'm so embarrassed about it. You know, we me and another guy got together again and scoped this thing out for 3 days in a motel room watching this place, you know. They dealt with these appliances. They were just big distributor, man. They had all kinds of money in this place, you know, and we had already found out everything, you know. And we're over in this motel getting loaded and checking this out and planning it out, man. This one's going to come out just right, you know. And the only thing is, addicts don't do too good when they're loaded. Hey, so we went in the place and thought, yeah, we'll just tie everybody up, you know, and kidnap the gal, you know, and all this. I don't know what the hell we thought we was going to do with her, but, and then we changed our mind about that. No, man, we don't want to get on that big criminal list or nothing like that. We just want to get some money, man. We don't want to get into kidnapping. That's, man, he pulled a lot of years for that stuff, you know, so. So we decided, you know, just to have them bag the money up in these big freezer bags they had, you know, and I don't know, there was 3 or 4 of them, man, I don't know. I ain't seen that much money in a long time. Been a long time since I seen that much money. I think it was the Texas deal was the last time, you know. So anyhow, a few minutes later, I'm walking down the street after we go in the place and get everything sacked up. Here come the police car driving up. The guy gets out, throws the handcuffs on me, puts me in the car, and every dime that we were stealing is still in that store. We didn't take a penny out of there. Had them lay it up on the counter, I walked right out and left it. Never got a dime, you know. And man, these cops, you ought to see them, man. That guy had me in the back seat, you know, and down at the police station. And this guy said, man, I'm going to tell you something. He said, I've been on the Oregon police force for 21 years. He said, I ain't never seen no crook like you. And he didn't even lock me up. He took me straight to the Oregon State Nut House, man. You know. And that's the kind of stuff I did, see? So I don't know. Some of these guys was good at it, but not me. You know. So finally, I left Denver on the run, and I wound up in Seattle, and I ran into a guy that I'd been in Huntsville with. It was straight. And he didn't get straight here where we're at, or in this program. He did it somewhere else. And he took me there for a few times. And I didn't get clean. But he told me about a guy down in Portland, the name of Harry. And he said, I think I know a guy that might be able to head you in the right direction. So after going there for a little bit, I got a hold of Harry down in Portland. And then I got hooked up with four other addicts, you know, and to my knowledge, okay, I've heard a lot of different stuff than this about this. To my knowledge, I cleaned up with the first four addicts in the Seattle area. And but that was after 18 months of trying to get clean, too. So I wasn't much better at that than I was at robbery. You know? I mean, I used to get mixed up in leaving and getting back. You know, I thought they meant, don't get loaded while you're sitting here. You know? And had a hard time with that. You know? Had a hard time with it, you know? And took 18 months to ever get to a meeting all the way clean. You know? So what I want to say to anybody in this room, and there might be somebody sitting in here, you know, very seldom you're ever going to go to a convention this big and find somebody that hadn't had one hell of a time with this program. So I want to let anybody know that sitting in this meeting here, that I don't care if you have tried 6 million times to come here and get clean, come back one more time. To see all of that comes under the head, and I'm not turning my back on our wounded man, because addicts are a trout, man. You can tell them what's going to happen to them. You can tell them they're going to go to prison, or they're going to, whatever the hell is going to happen to them, and they got to touch the paint to see if it's wet every time. You know? We just know that you're born to be that way somehow. You know, seems to me like. You know? Reminds me, a guy told one time about this guy, man. He said he went in this building and there was two doors in it, you know. And this guy could have went over to this one door, and here stands this great big bounce at the door and just kicked the living shit out of him every time he tried to go through this door. Instead of going through the other door, you know. So the next week, he come back, the guy do it again. He go right back to that same door, there goes old big guy after him again. So the third time he comes over there, the big guy ain't there, so he goes looking for him. Yeah. And, man, that's an addict. That's an addict. You know. It's a trip, man. I can't believe what the stuff we do sometimes, man. It just blows me away, you know. And you know, when I'm up here talking to you, you know, I talk funny a lot. And you know what I mean? Sometimes I embarrass my own self, because a lot of things don't come out like I mean for them to. You know, I don't, I think I went to school, I think, maybe 3 weeks. So I never did really learn much about reading or writing. I do read and write just a little bit now, you know, like I can sign birthday cards. So when I first started getting clean, I had a real hard time. I had a real hard time. You know, I was a guy that when finally people started writing out four steps, I couldn't nowhere in the world believe that I was ever going to be able to stay clean, because I couldn't write, you know. And I remember in Seattle getting Pepe as my original sponsor in California here, you know. That was my original sponsor. Wasn't nobody in Seattle cleaning up the sponsor yet. You know, you got to understand that NA is real new in Seattle. And we ain't got, you know, I felt, you know, when I was asked to come here, man, I was so overwhelmed by being asked. I couldn't believe it. I think it took me a few days to even answer that I would. You know, you got people right here in this room, let alone this area and region. You got people right here in this room that's been in banquet chow lines longer than I've been in NA. You know? And, you know, I wonder why did I get asked for this? You know what I mean? I'm not one of these guys that got clean for a little while and believes that everybody's waiting just to call me up and ask me to speak somewhere. You know? I've done it a few times and I try to keep the ego out, way out of the way on it, man, because, you know, I believe you can be a speaker all over the country, in every state, every convention you go to. You can work these steps 15 different times. You can have the best sponsor in the world. The highest you ever get in Narcotics Anonymous is clean. That's top dog here. Get any higher than clean, we ain't here. And that's deep, man. See, I got to be simple, man. I'm, you know, some stuff is just way over my head, man. I try to understand, and I just can't. Sometimes I try to work this thing with what you got left to work it with after 31 years of hard using. Like, you know, I went on methadone the first time at 19 and the last time at 44. And I twisted a lot of stuff in my head, man. I came in this program out of prison with a pretty twisted mind. You know, I had a hard, hard time learning to get along with people in this program. You know, I had to, believe it or not, do a lot of work, you know. Sometimes my actions may not show it, but I had to do a lot of work on myself, you know what I mean, with a lot of different people. And I had to go to meetings and listen real good because I couldn't read the steps, you know. And I had to be able to find a way to work this thing. And I remember a time I was talking to somebody about it today when I called up Pepe one time, man, and, you know, I told him, I said, man, I don't know how I'm going to be able to do this deal. He said, what do you mean? I said, I don't know how I'm going to be able to stay straight, man. I said, I can't read or write. He said, I understand that, you know. And I said, well, how am I ever going to be able to stay straight, you know? He said, what I want you to do is go home or go someplace and get with somebody that can read and write and make me up a list of everybody you know in NA that got loaded because they couldn't read. And you know, I wanted to come up with a big old list, man, but I couldn't. See? And what that guy did, he took all question out of it of whether anybody could stay straight in this program that came here, man. And that's what that did for me, and it got me simple enough to work the simple program. See? So, you know, I started today was talking about still going to 90 meetings in 90 days, you know, and I was telling somebody, you know, when I finally got all the way clean in Seattle, I stayed kind of clean for a while, but kind of clean, don't get it. When I finally got all the way clean, it was one meeting in Seattle. Okay, there was one meeting on Tuesday night, and the only reason that it started on Tuesday night because all of us got clean on Tuesday. So, we started the meeting on Tuesday. At that time, I went to three meetings a month. No, six meetings a month. We went to that meeting in Seattle. We drove down to Portland and went to a meeting. And we drove up to Vancouver, Canada, and we went to a meeting. And that was our three closest meetings to Seattle, Washington at that time, in 1978. Okay? So, I go to a whole lot more meetings now than I did then. Like that one meeting that we had in Seattle went from one meeting to what, Bob? 120 meetings a week now? Okay. Tell me there ain't nothing going on in NA. You know what I mean? And I've even got accused of starting NA in Seattle. I ain't never started nothing in my life but trouble. What we did is got out of the way and let God do his job. That's what we did. Because it's a God-given program. I believe that. You know, I had a guy that started a step meeting in Seattle. It was a pretty bright guy, you know, and got clean and he was putting some time together, and he started a step meeting called Step and Move. And you know, I used to sit with that guy, you know, right next to him. And there wasn't enough people to have like a chairperson, and then I like to do it a lot of meetings, you know, and the secretary and all that. So he was chief cook and bottle washer, you know. So he would they would work a step a week out of the basic tax, you know. He would take that thing, they would read the step, they pass it around, and different people would read, you know, and it. Of course, they would go by me when it come to me, and then you go to the next person, and you know. And I used to sit down and listen to how this lady had worked the step, and how this guy had worked the step, and I found a way in between all of that that I was able to work a step. See, and you know that went on clean up through. You know, I believe it was when I was on the third step, man, that you know people were talking about, you know, that you got to take the steps and work them straight through 1 through 12 and not vary from that, you know. And when I was 3 years clean, that's the closest that I can remember since I've been clean of getting loaded, you know. And I had to go straight from step 3 and work an 8th step on killing these two guys down in Texas. And I had to figure out a way, and I did over a period of time, to go down to Texas and do a 9th step for this guy's mom. Okay? After that, for I believe it was 12 straight years, I got a Christmas card from this lady till she died. You know, that was awesome, man. That was awesome, you know, to go back to the scene of the crime, you know. And that was one of the hardest things I've ever done in this program, and I knew if I could do that, I could do anything, you know. Because that's the stuff that ate on me for years in prison, man. Year after year after year, that would eat at me, you know. And, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day, you know, that's been a pretty good while back now, you know, and I still have nightmares over that. All this time later, you know, you would think that maybe it wouldn't be like that no more. It would just like go away, but it hasn't, you know. And I don't know why, and I don't understand why, and I'm not going to try to figure it out. But sometimes it gets scary for me, you know. I wonder why am I still having nightmares. I can see it just like it happened yesterday in Technicolor, and it eats me up. And then I look back at it like I did the best that I could to straighten everything out, and I can get back at peace with myself that way, you know, and it makes it okay somehow, you know, with the help that I got from all you guys and gals. Man, these people in this program, the stuff by me, see some of the damnedest stuff you've ever seen in your life, you know. There's people right here in this room that stood by me through that quadruple bypass, man. That though was my house every single day. We go way back, man. This guy was at my house every single day, you know. taking care of me, you know, and I try to do a little bit of something for him now, you know. And, you know, that's kind of how we get out of ourselves, you know. We you know, when we get into this deal that woe is us, you know, that we got all these problems and everything, sometimes the best thing we can do is work with another addict that's having problems, you know. And, so I try to support events for my friends that have these serious problems, man, because, you know, what I believe is that the road to recovery is always under construction for people like us. You know, that we're gonna have these living problems as we go through this walk of life we got here, man. That, you know, we come in here and you know, a lot of times it is great. And Lady talked about that some, you know, and I mean, you know, there's been some sad times in a lot of addicts' lives that I know, man, since they've been clean. You know, it's, you know, I did, when I had that quadruple bypass, man, they dropped me off the screen twice for 3 minutes. And like, you know, that's affected my memory. And I get embarrassed about that. I can't remember stuff like I want to because, you know, I lost a lot of oxygen when that happened, you know. And now with this liver problem and that bullet in the spine is this, man, it's taking its toll, man. You know what I mean? But, you see, the thing of it is, for a guy like me and for a lot of people like you, man, any day above ground's a good day. You know. I mean, you know, if I can stand 5'10" above ground, I'm shitting in high cotton, man. You know, this thing's a trip. You know. This thing's a trip, man. I got people right here that's supporting me from my area, man. I got a guy sitting back here that I sponsor, man. I think the only one that's ever stayed clean. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they don't, I don't know. They just don't work out with me, man. You know, they too deep for me. You know? And I, you know, I don't know why that is. I feel bad sometimes even about that. Why can't I be a good sponsor, you know? I asked Teppy one time, how come I can't be a good sponsor? He said, I don't know. Oh, God. You know, simple stuff, man, that I live by, see? You know? Man, I've had some of the guys you ever seen, you know? And most of them I don't sponsor anymore and stuff, you know? And, I mean, I've had them... You know, I've had them come to me with the stuff, and they go to talking to me about some of this stuff that they're into, and, you know, I said, I wish you luck. Let me know how you come out. you know, and, some of them come out pretty good. Some of them don't, you know. But the thing of it is, you know, I didn't hire out in this program to be a sponsor. I figured I was lucky to even be able to get clean my own self, let alone help anybody else. You know? But I mean, that don't mean that I'm not going to try to help somebody, because I guarantee you one thing, man, if you don't believe I'll be that guy that'll come and pick you up if you're loaded, you call me sometime and check me on my bullshit. You know what I'm saying? I've been known to take people to meetings that didn't even want to get clean. You know? Several of them, you know? I used to hear the old stories in NA about the old guys way ahead of me that used to pick guys up like that too, man. You know, they needed somebody else to talk to, you know? There wasn't very many people in NA at one time, man. You know, a lot of people take for granted this program, you know what I'm saying? You know, we got to look at the years back, the people, the years and years before us, the stuff that was put into this thing to get it going for us, man. And it wasn't like all of these people in this room, when they first cleaned up, there was 120 meetings to go to. Man, these people had the scratch to get a place to go to, man. You know? So we better appreciate that. You know, I know guys in my hometown, man, they grumble because the meeting moved from straight across the street from them to a block down the street. You know, I let them know I'm real glad I didn't have to clean up with a guy like that. You know, I'm glad I cleaned up with the people that I did clean up with, man, because, you know, we come in here with some pretty twisted lives, like I said, you know, and I had a hard time being able to come in here and get along with you guys, you know, man, and you know, I believe today, you know, I try to work regular on this deal, man. I try to work real regular with whatever education I got, man. I go to meetings. I go to a lot of meetings on diversity, man, because I believe I don't care if we're black, brown, gray, or whatever the hell color we are, we're equal in here. No. And I want to make sure that I learn that well, because I want to teach that to somebody behind me. We don't need somebody coming in here letting somebody think that they don't have no right to be in this program because of their sexual preference or whatever it is, man. We got to let people know that, man, they got a right to be in here, that this is an equal rights program. You know, and and we got to let them know they got a right to be in here if they didn't use the same as whatever some of the rest of us did. You know, I spend as much time on the use as I did using. You know, I used to hear these guys talk about, man, they use 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I spend as much time in doorways and alleys waiting on dope as I did using. I sat up there in Seattle behind a dumpster all night long waiting for a guy to get back that I gave $50 to that I knew wasn't even coming back. And couldn't wait till the next week to get a thing from it to another $50. Man, I got all kinds of longevity in parking lots and alleys and stuff, man. And if I would have used as much as I wanted to use, I wouldn't even be alive today. You know? But also, if I thought I could have used one more time, I'd have used one more time. You know? I believe I would, you know? You know, I wanted to get clean real bad when I got clean, man. And, you know, we had tried for a pretty good while there, and it was starting to look like I was giving up on my own self, you know, and that's what happens to a lot of addicts, man. And what you need to know is you got to keep on coming back here, because the thing of it is, the more times that we go in and out of here, you know, what happens a lot of time, a window shade comes down between us and this program, and we don't get back in here. And that's happened to many addicts, man. I got a real sad thing going, you know. It just happened to a friend. It cleaned up with the first five of us in Seattle. This guy got loaded after 14 years. And like, he was my partner, man. You know, me and this guy go way back, you know. We used to fish together. We used to do all these things together, you know. And this guy, you know, after he got loaded, he never really got back in again. He never got back in, you know. He came to meetings, man, and we would talk, and he used to ask me if I thought he could get clean. And I used to say, sure you can, man. I said, you know, how many times have we brought each other in here, man? We used to, him and I used to rotate getting loaded when we was trying to get clean. You know? Depended on what day of the week it was, who had the most time. You know? And the guy was young when he cleaned up, you know? He was young when he cleaned up, man. Had a hell of a future going for him, you know, man. Went to school to be a welder and everything. And he finally, man, you know, he just kept coming in and out and in and out, you know. Then he finally moved over Eastern Washington and offed himself with a shotgun. And, you know, that really saddens me, man. What I thought about that is, what a waste. What a waste for somebody to, you know. And you know what suicide is in this program? It's a permanent solution to a temporary problem. That's all it is, man. Stuff can be worked out. Stuff can be worked out in here. You know, we just gotta, you know, we gotta bond together and just keep working on things in here, man, and keep supporting each other. It's just like, you know, sometimes I just I get totally overwhelmed, you know, just like I did when I was asked to come down here, man. You know, I've never been treated with any more love and respect, I don't believe, in my entire life than I have the people right here at this convention. You know? And I'm not saying that because I'm standing up here. I'm going to say it when I leave here, man, because, you know, I believe I'd rather see a sermon than hear one in this program. You know, we can get up here and do the prettiest talk in the world, and when we go out that door, that's when it counts, man. You know, that's when it counts. You know, some of the things that can happen to us after we clean up, man, is this totally overwhelms me, man. I went to work when I was 44 years old. First legal job I've ever had in my entire life. You know, I went to work the same age that most people retire. I've got guys go out of work that are retiring with 20 years that are less than 44 years old. I'm still plugging right along there, man, you know. You know, and I got that job, you know. I went and filled out an application, you know, for this job with Metro. You know, well, the one thing that I did learn when I was in Huntsville, I learned to be a diesel mechanic. You know, and as far as I'm concerned, I'm the best goddamn diesel mechanic that ever walked. You know, bar none. That's where my self-esteem is. You know, I've made diesel mechanic of the year with Metro 8 years in a row. You know? And when I fill out my application, you ought to see a copy of that. You ever been in jail? No. You ever been arrested? No. No, no, no. And they got another sheet on that for education. You ever been to college? Yes. Where did you go to college at? University of Huntsville. You know, the lady that took this application, she still works at personnel downtown, and I see her once in a while now, and we got a thing going, you know. She come up to me one day and said, "Man," I said, "I'm going to ask you something." I said, "Sure." She said, "What's this?" She said, "I mean, when you filled out that application," she said, I was born and raised in Texas," and she said, "they don't have a University of Huntsville." I said, "Bullshit." They got a major college down there, man. Turn out some Class A students. And you know, I've been on that job now 16 and a half years. You know? And I'm trying desperately to make it to a retirement. You know, I'm trying to get another 4.5 years in so I can retire. You know, instead of getting booted out on a disability. You know, so I got some struggles going on. You know, but I know that with the help of you guys and this program that I'm gonna be able to do that. You know, and so many good things has happened. You know, there's a family right here in this room from my area. The father, the mother, and two daughters are in this program. And the father, and the mother, and the daughter, and the small fry, which is the daughter's little one, just celebrated 90 days clean. And she's 93 days old. And I just happened to be her godfather. If you can sit there and tell me that there's not a power greater than us in Narcotics Anonymous when a guy that sat on death row for 2.5 years was picked for somebody's godfather, I'll put in with anybody. You know, if you can sit in this room after the countdown that you just saw and tell me that there's no time in Narcotics Anonymous, like that big line of bull that I've heard a lot of places, you know. I told a guy the other day that was telling me about he goes somewhere else because there wasn't much time in Narcotics Anonymous. I said, if you don't like the amount of time in Narcotics Anonymous, stay in Narcotics Anonymous and get some time. And that's what I believe. Okay? You see, when this committee took a chance on asking me to come here, I had mixed feelings about it at first because of the things that I've told you, you know. But some of my friends here called me and told me that I was picked for this, you know, and it totally overwhelmed me that I was asked, you know, because I don't claim to be a top-of-the-line speaker, man. I don't claim to be something that I'm not. You know, I claim to be myself, and that's all I ever wanted to be. And before I come to this program, when I used to sit in the joint, man, on death row, what I used to think is, why in the hell can't I just be myself? You know what I mean? And it took a long time to get from there to here. So, you know, when we see the guy sitting next to us in here, man, and the gal across from us, you know, we got to remember, man, that addicts come in here with some pretty twisted minds, and we got to give each other a chance to heal up, because I don't believe this healing thing happens overnight. You know, it might for some people, but it didn't for me, and it's still in the process. You know, I'm still trying to strive to do better and try to treat you guys better, you know, and every time that I treat somebody better, I get treated right myself. You know, so I believe this thing is a program that I've never seen nothing like it, man. You know, I've never seen nothing like it. You know, I spoke a little deal just a while back. You know, and I've been asked a couple of times. You know, and sometimes I want to say no, and then people tell me to not say no. I don't think I got to offer what the next person has, you know, and what I have to remember in here is Pappy told me one time, he said, you use your own self or your yardstick. You don't measure yourself by somebody else. He said, you have to measure your own self by you and where you came from and what you're doing with your life today. Okay, I'm getting ready to close it off, and I'm going to do that with a couple of things. I want to say that if you're a guy in this program and you come in here from the joint or off the street or wherever you come from, you come in this program and you work it the best you can, you become the man in here. You're not a punk anymore. If you're a woman and you come into this program, it don't matter where you come in here from. It don't matter if you were selling it on the street or what you were doing. You come in here and you work this program the best you can, you become a woman in here. You're not abroad anymore. Yeah. I don't know any broads in NA. I know a lot of women. A lot of women, man. And, you know, if that don't do nothing else for you, I hope it will give you a little self-esteem. You're not a piece of crap in here, man. You know, you stand up in here for what you believe in, or you fall for anything. You know, you pick a birthday and you keep it, and you do all these certain things that many people right here in this room has done before me. So the last thing I'm going to say, I want to end by, you know, thanking the committee for asking me. And somebody asked me if I was nervous about doing this, and I told them, no, I'm always nervous. I don't get nervous. I'm always that way. So I want to end by saying that the clean time that I've got and the little piece of recovery that goes with it, I consider to be a gift from God. What I do with my clean time and how I carry myself in your program is my gift back to God, and I hope He's as happy with my gift to Him as I am from His to me. Thank you very much.